Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. It's October. On 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, I'm afraid to ask.
What would you like to know?
Hustle stuff.
Bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news.
I want to borrow that shirt.
Major steps backwards.
Yeah.
Not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
Really sure what's going on, but I did a 21-mile ride. It's not a very long ride whatsoever.
No,
it did have
not.
65 feet of climbing per mile.
Right.
So there was definitely that factor involved.
It's
but
very hilly.
I have absolutely nothing when it comes to putting power into the pedals.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is on a, you know how when you go to the doctor's office or you go to an emergency room where they've said, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your pain level? Like 1 being the easiest and 10 being the worst. It was
sure.
A 10. Maybe an 11. Maybe an 11.
During the ride or after?
Oh, every time I tried to put power on the pillows.
Oh.
Every single time.
Yeah.
So I would say most of the ride was like that. Yeah. There were some moments where, you know, if I was on a flat section or a downhill, I could just spin it out because I wasn't putting a lot of pressure on the pedals.
Yeah.
The minute I needed power, the minute I needed to put any kind, exert any kind of power at all, it just wasn't, it was just this excruciating pain. And something's not right.
It sounds like you're not rebuilding or you're not quickly rebuilding your fast twitch muscles. Your fast twitch muscle
have
fibers.
I have no fast twitch muscles, I think, is what's going
on. Either they're not working or they're not rebuilding, and I don't know which it is.
And it's
not
for
taking Coenzyme Q10, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not for a lack of trying to rebuild them.
Yes.
I'm in the gym every day.
Right.
You know?
Well, in the gym, meaning, are you doing resistance training on your legs?
Not resistance training every day.
Every
2 days a week is resistance training on the legs.
And what do you do when you do resistance training on the legs?
I do squats and I do leg presses.
Okay, so you're doing those. My goodness.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And you're taking branched chain amino acids.
I am.
And you're eating a lot of protein.
I am.
Wow.
But something's not right.
We need a mechanism of action so we can fix this. And, you know, as we said, when you don't have enough cholesterol, you can't rebuild muscle cells. It makes it difficult to rebuild muscle cells because you need the cholesterol for your cell membranes. And we know that, you know, having muscle issues is something that both any drug that lowers cholesterol, whether it's a PCSK9 inhibitor or a statin or ezetimibe, which is just a cholesterol, I don't know what you'd call that, a sequestrin or a remover. And then there are the sequestrins, the bile acid salts, bile salts. Those are sequestrins.
One of my colleagues from this weekend said, so what do you mean? What kind of pain are you talking about? And I said to him, say, you know when you do a 100-mile bike ride and you get the next morning and you decide you're just going to go spin out for 20 miles, but your legs never warm up? That's where I'm at. My legs never warm up.
Yeah.
They never get past that pain threshold of warm up, which is always been an issue for me anyway, but this is much
so we're greater. Doing great things for you. Where you're eating protein, I'm having you take branched chain amino acids. The only thing you're not taking that might be a help is creatine.
Creatine.
That would be another thing.
Somebody else suggested that to me too.
I think that so that would be something we could add. But I need to talk to somebody who knows better than me, and I'm thinking of shouting out to my buddy Jade Tita, who is naturopath, brilliant naturopath par excellence, who knows a lot about muscle building.
Right.
So, and metabolism and working out. So I think he'll find this very interesting. So I'm going to reach out to him and see at what level we need to interact with him.
Okay.
Even if you need to have a consult with him, because this is ridiculous. I'm sure he'll find, if I write to him, he will find this interesting.
I would like someone to find it interesting because yeah.
I do.
Well, I know you do.
And I'm throwing everything I can at it. You're taking whey protein, and whey protein doesn't bother you. Like, you don't get digestive upset from taking whey protein,
right?
Oh, no,
not at all.
So you got the whey protein going. And whey protein, if you're not dairy intolerant, it's my favorite protein supplement, because whey protein, if you're not dairy intolerant, it doesn't cause inflammation like it does with me. It goes in the easiest. It really is absorbable. It contains its own branched chain amino acids, and it's the amino acids are really absorbable. And there's glutamine. The one you have has glutamine in it, and it says it has postbiotics, but I think it has prebiotics and probiotics in it too. So you're taking a really nice whey protein supplement.
Right.
So you've got that on board. You eat protein, you eat eggs, you eat, you know, turkey breast and chicken breast.
Right. Right.
And
fish
and you eat
chicken
cheese.
And yeah, all
right.
These things. Yeah.
Right. I wonder if you need to record how much protein, you need to calculate how much protein you're consuming in grams. We want to make sure you're at least 100 grams a day.
I think I was running somewhere around 100 to 120.
That's good.
The last time I checked.
That's really good. We'll find out from Jade if that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we need to do that. And you're doing anti-inflammatory. You're taking a really high-end curcumin for inflammation.
Uh-huh.
You're taking SPM, although the SPM, you maybe need to take more. That's the special pro-resolving mediator.
I don't know what that is.
Yes, it is. That essential fatty acid thing I gave you that you're taking one a day.
It's SPM. Fish oil?
It's not really fish. There's cod liver oil in it, but it's not...
Yeah,
technically fish oil, it's SPM.
I'm taking one of those a day.
Yeah. And the one that doesn't bother your stomach. Yeah, that's
right.
SPM. And
should
that's
I be
a great...
doing more than one of those a day?
Maybe.
Okay.
It's an anti-inflammatory. I don't know if... Don't do that yet, because I don't know if inflammation is why this is happening.
Right.
This sounds to me more like you're having trouble building fast twitch muscle fibers.
Mm.
And I just hope it's that, not that your body's mechanism has been damaged. Your body's mechanism for making fast twitch muscle fibers has been damaged, because this is a gene. The drug was a gene therapy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a monoclonal antibody, and we don't know what it did in your there's some interesting ideas about what it might have done in your body. I'm going to get a hold of Jade and see if I can consult with him and see if we have to, you know, have you have a consult with him. I think that's what we should do. I mean, he's in North Carolina, so you would be doing it remotely, unless you want to fly to North Carolina.
No, you don't.
I mean, the guy lives in Asheville.
Yeah, no, I don't want to. So, I don't want to fly into there right now.
No, you sure don't.
He may not even be there. All we know.
It's there. They're rebuilding.
Is he there though?
He's in North Carolina. He's just not in Asheville.
Okay.
He went to stay with his sister. He said he's going to stay with his sister. I'm not sure where the sister is.
Oh, good move.
Because
they're still uncovering bodies. It's bad. It's bad.
I know. And big shout out to my friend Lois and her sister Lisa, who are, they were bodily unhurt, but she showed a video of the destruction, and she lives off the Swannanoa River, and she showed just this golf course is destroyed. Her road, the end of her road is in pieces.
Right.
There's flooding everywhere. She's fine, thank God, but she said there was some damage to the roof in her house, and you know, there's a lot of flooding, and her cars got taken out by a tree.
Yeah.
But you know, better the cars. You know, the insurance will pay for the cars.
Right.
Better the cars than
cars are replaceable, lives are not.
She is not, and we love Lois.
Yeah.
Her and then my other girlfriend from high school. This is a friend from high school. Another friend from high school, Renee. She's in Augusta, and they took it hard too. So Augusta's in Western Georgia, and they took it hard too. So she's been out of power. I don't think she has her power back on. It's been over a week.
Hmm.
Yeah. And her house, I think her house did okay, but she had tree damage. There's a lot of debris in the yard. And I just came back from Venice, Florida. And Venice didn't do too bad. The Miyaka River, it always swells. Northport did badly last time in Ian, and it swelled again this time. The Barrier Islands outside of Sarasota, they did badly with Helene.
Mm-hmm.
And so Siesta Key is trashed. Casey Key is trashed. And I like to ride my bike to Manasota Key.
Right.
And Manasota Key is not too far from, I mean, it's less than maybe 10-ish miles from my mom's house
right.
to get to by bike. And I went as far as the beach. And people were on the beach. There was a very nice man sweeping up. So there's a lot of sand. Sand came in to places where it shouldn't be. So there right. was sand covering the pavilion at Manasota Beach as well as Venice Beach. Do you remember that we went to the jetty, the North Jetty in Venice? Like, we do a bike ride. We'd go ride our bikes to the beach.
I remember that.
Yep. And then we go look at the jetty. Well, right. there's a concession there called Captain Jack's or something.
Something like
Jack.
That. Yeah.
That got swept away.
Oh,
and
really?
Humphreys Park is a mess. I don't know if the jetty's completely gone, but it got wrecked. So even though Helene went, it made landfall at Tallahassee, you know, in the Big Bend and at Tallahassee, the Outer Bands affected the entire coastline, and there was, there's flooding and stuff. And now, so we're recording this a couple days before Wednesday, October 9th.
Right.
And Wednesday, October 9th is when Milton is supposed to make landfall.
Yeah, there's another one coming. Yep.
And Milton, and everybody's terrified. And Milton's track, the cone of uncertainty is from Tampa to just north of the Keys. So my mom's right there. And she's fine. She's like, I'm fine. I'm going to be fine. It's not going to be that bad. And it's true. When we were in Ian, I was there. And her house has excellent construction. And nothing happened. I mean, she had a tiny bit of water come in the lanai, and she had a tiny bit of roof damage, but, you know, nothing concerning. The house has really excellent construction, but it looks like it's going to make landfall at Tampa.
Jesus, a stack of them. Hurricane Leslie after that, and then...
No, Leslie and Kirk are before that.
Oh, they were.
I mean, look at their names, okay. Leslie
right,
and
right,
Kirk.
Right, right.
And they're in the Atlantic, and they're not... I don't think they're going to be a factor. Yeah, you can see Milton.
Yeah,
it's over
way,
the Yucatan.
Way over in the Gulf.
Yeah, it's on the Yucatan, but in 2 days it's going to be at Florida. So, and they're thinking when it hits, it's going to be Cat 3 or 4. It's not good. I'm not happy. I just
east,
wish my mom...
southeast, 7 knots, 8
yeah.
miles per hour.
I'm just hoping my mom stays safe. I hope everybody stays safe. But the reality is... anything could happen at this point. It's very sad.
Right.
So then as far as me, the issue that I had was this was the hottest trip in September that I had. What I noticed was when I was in Venice, first of all, this time of year, the sun rises really late there. And it rises later there than here because they're very far west in the time zone. Like Venice, Florida, if you took a line due north, you're on the Pennsylvania-Ohio border. So it's much further west than here. And the time zone changes somewhere in Indiana. So our sun is rising now a little before 7. And their sun is rising now like at 7:23, so 7:24. And our latest sunrise here in Mansfield, Connecticut, is 7:23 a.m., and that happens the day before daylight savings time. Of course, it keeps getting later, but it's back an hour because of daylight savings time, because of standard time, returning to standard time. And then in January, the sunrise tops out at 7:16 a.m. So the latest sunrise actually happens the day before daylight saving, or before we go back to standard time. Their sunrise tops out at 7:40. So the sun rises very late there, and then the heat starts to come up. So it'll be in the high 70s when you wake up, and you have maybe an hour or two before it becomes oppressively hot. The oppressive heat starts somewhere in the 9 o'clock hour. By the 10 o'clock hour, you're having a feels like of 100. Even if the temperature is in the low to mid 80s, the feels like is 100, and then it gets up to 90, and the feels like is still 100. And I found that riding my bike was very difficult. I never had so much trouble with the heat. I stupidly, the first day I was there, the first full day, I got on my bike at 11:30 a.m. Don't do that time of year. And I rode for 40 minutes and stopped at my mother's friend's house and had to lay down. I was near heat exhaustion at that point. I got cool, I drank, I rested, and then I only had 3.5 miles to get back to my mom's house, and I was fine. That was okay. The next day I rode, I got out a little bit earlier and I rode in mostly shaded roads and I rode in the neighborhoods out to the beach and I got back and I wasn't too bad. I had normal, I feel hot, I have to cool off, I have to drink. Then 2 days later, I did a 26-mile ride. I started off in the 8 o'clock hour and rode 26 miles out on a flat road, the Legacy Trail, and out and back to my mother's house. And when I got back, I was close to heat exhaustion. And when I got back, the feels like was 100 degrees and was extremely humid. I was able to ride, and you don't really feel it as much when you're actually riding because you have the air blowing on you. But when I got in the house, I'm like, I have to lie down. I was a little bit queasy, but I got out of it and I was pleased about that. But it's like you have a narrow window of when you can exercise if you're not tolerant to the heat. And when I was on the Legacy Trail, there were tons of people on the Legacy Trail riding. So they're acclimated to it, but I did not feel acclimated to it. And so for me, other than those heat issues, I did pretty well health-wise. I didn't have any... my knee was pretty good. I had a little bit of achiness, not bad. I was able to exercise and do whatever I wanted when I was there. I did my yoga and I went to yoga on the beach, and I was able to ride my bike without trouble. The knee's taped and I wore a compression sleeve over the knee while I was there. And I just drank a lot, you know, just drank constantly and had some coconut water, which my mother had at home. And as you may recall, I've started taking a blood pressure med. So I'm taking a very baby dose, 2.5 milligrams of lisinopril, and I'm taking it successfully. I'm continuing to take it. I think it's taken the edge off my blood pressure. Not so extreme. I don't think it's completely down, but it's better than it was. And I'm able to take the drug. So it's not making me excessively dizzy. It's making me thirsty and have to go to the bathroom more, but that's okay. I can deal with that. The thing you have to do is you just have to stay constantly hydrated. And it was hard to stay hydrated in Florida because you sweat the least little bit and then you need to drink. And it was very dry in my mother's house because she's running the air conditioning all the time. So you just have to have water in front of you all the time. And I'm still doing that now, even here. So the other interesting thing is I don't know if you experienced Florida has sulfur in the groundwater. So if you don't care for that taste, you have to filter it. And my mom's filters aren't filtering out the sulfur entirely. And sulfur is not bad for you. In fact, it's good for you. If you go to an area that has hot springs and there's sulfur in the water, sulfur is detoxifying. It helps you to make glutathione and N-acetylcysteine. And it's part of your structure. It's part of your joint structure. It's part of your skin. It's part of your connective tissue. So having a little bit of sulfur in the water is not a bad thing. It just tastes a little stinky, eggy. You know, now that I'm back here, we don't have that level of sulfur in our well water. And, you know, we have lovely well water at our house and our water is great. I'm drinking more of our nice water and I feel a little bit better that way. But yeah, I came out of this trip much more relaxed and feeling calmer and healthy and able to take the blood pressure med. I'm nervous about when I get back to seeing patients because that's always, you know, intense and stressful. So we'll see how that works. But it was a nice trip and I was able to get into a pool and float and relax and that kind of thing. I was very pleased because I got my mother to go to the pool a bunch of times and that was really good for her joints. So if you get to a point where you have to take a drug for your blood pressure because you've tried everything else and your blood pressure is just not coming down, lisinopril, I'm having success with it. And the interesting thing about lisinopril is it's an ACE inhibitor. I think occasionally I get that dry cough, but mostly not. And most of my friends who take it, they say they have no side effects. I find that I'm not particularly dizzy. Interesting thing about lisinopril is it does some other things. It has some anti-inflammatory components to it. It reduces bradykinin pathways. That's something I read about it. And the other thing is it has some mood enhancing effects. So whereas, you know, blood pressure medicines can dampen your mood, especially if you take beta blockers, they just slow you down. This doesn't seem to do that. It seems to have some mood enhancing effects. And the way ACE inhibitors work, ACE inhibitors and ARBs, which are the sartans, losartan, olmesartan, Candace Sartan, all the different Sartans, those are angiotensin receptor antagonists. The Artan means angiotensin receptor antagonist. That's what Sartan is. So those drugs, they all ultimately make you lose more water and sodium, so it reduces your blood vessel and relaxes your blood vessels. So if you have more relaxed blood vessels, you can get more circulation into your brain, and I wonder if that's part of the mechanism by which it enhances mood. So that's interesting. So I don't mind taking it so far. If I have to increase the dose, I'm a little nervous about doing that. So we'll see, and I'm going to chat with my PCP who prescribed it for me on what we call a New Jersey Mischief Night, which is October 30th. And I know you don't have Mischief Night in Connecticut, and I don't think you have something like that in Massachusetts either. But the 30th, different states in the country have funny names, and it's the day before Halloween, and that's when you're supposed to like throw the eggs on the car and do toilet paper on the trees and do naughty things. And terrible. I asked Ron, if you don't have Mischief Night, when do you do that stuff? And he said,
Halloween.
Like, oh, but Halloween's when you go party and you go trick-or-treating. Anyway.
That's older. When you're an older kid, then you start being mischievous.
Right. And leaving things on people's doorsteps and burning it.
Right. Yes. Well, only if they were bad to you.
Yes. So anyway, so that's what's going on there. I wonder what time it is.
What time?
I wonder what time it is, yeah.
Oh, okay. Don't worry about it. You've got plenty of time.
Thank you. All right. So anyway, so let's go on to some topics. I've been talking about fat loss, and I'll get to that in a sec, but I wanted to talk about autumn anxiety. So I'm kind of leaning into autumn myself, and I know it's hard because the sun is rising later and the sun is setting earlier and the sun is lower in the sky and it's getting colder. I really try to lean into that. Now, I know that not everybody can, but I do try to lean into that and try to lean into the idea of the Scandinavian idea of hygge, which is where you relax, you wear cozy things, you read books, you drink hot drinks, you eat soup, and you allow the darkness to embrace you and relax in it. And, you know, because part of my issue after having, post-vaccine syndrome as well as Lyme disease is overstimulation and autonomic issues. I find darkness soothing. So if I frame it that way, I find the darkness soothing. It's easier on my eyes. It's easier on my system. And, you know, I allow the darkness to allow me to relax. When you go to the float tank over at Yono or wherever you go for your float tank, one of the things that you do is you lie in that pod and you close the pod and you turn the lights off, and then you have a lack of stimulation, and that's really good for you, and it's good for your brain to do that. Not everybody can do that because they find it frightening, and I understand that. I talked to my mother about the possibility of doing a float. She said, no way. She couldn't possibly do it, you know, to be in a pod and have it be dark. And I explained to her that if you do a float, you don't have to close the pod. You can keep the pod open. You can keep the light on. The floating is probably the most important part, but it depends on the person if they're willing to float or not. So to be in the dark or not. But I embrace the darkness and allow it to help me relax. My office manager, Amy, she works for Tobacco Road Farms. And she looks forward to this time of year because they don't work as much or as hard. And she also embraces the darkness, and she embraces the time of year where she gets to relax and stay home and drink tea and read books and, you know, just do a bit less. And it's very restful to your body. So if you can frame it that way, you can get through the season a little bit better. Now, if you have seasonal affective disorder, that's still going to be hard for you, and you should do things that help you with seasonal affective disorder, like use a light box, take melatonin, eat cherries or cherry juice, drink cherry juice before you go to bed because you're going to get some melatonin that way. Take hibiscus tea, which also has melatonin. I found that I can't I have to be careful with hibiscus because it knocks me out. I probably am melatonin sufficient, and that's why it doesn't work for me. So autumn anxiety is really a thing. There's a yearly increase in anxiety in some people during the autumn months, and it may be because, you know, there's things that happen in the autumn. You begin the school year, the holiday season. You start thinking about the holiday season, and that's stressful. And you may feel bad because you didn't get done what you wanted to get done during the summer. And then your routine changes, your diet changes. There's the produce is different. You're going from eating a lot of salad and light frothy things to heavier things. Exercise becomes harder. You feel a bit more tired, so you don't feel like exerting yourself as much. So people tend to not exercise as much, and some people stop exercising, which is not a good idea. And finding an exercise that you will do year round is really the best thing to do. So if you make sure not to overdo sugars and starches and overeat in general, if you manage to get regular exercise, whatever kind you can, and expose yourself to whatever daylight is out there, that can help you with autumn anxiety. Getting outside right now, it's gorgeous out. I mean, we have some of these beautiful, crisp, clear days here, and there's fall foliage to see. It's very lovely out. You dress for a little bit warmer right now, and it's really lovely to get out. Seeing the colors is going to help your brain too and make you feel a bit happier. So this time of year, there's less pool time, there's less sunshine, the days are shortening, and people get anxious. There are physicians who note this, people who are counselors note this. There's not necessarily an obvious external trigger, and it tends to recur every year. Many people don't realize how common anxiety in the autumn is and may not recognize it. And if it occurs yearly, the pattern becomes obvious, and you can do stuff to prevent it. You might feel low mood, you might feel depressed, you might be worried or anxious or irritable, sleepy, tired, lethargic. You may lose interest in your everyday activities. And that's because some of that, it's the effect on your body. When there's less sunlight, your serotonin gets lower. And when you have higher serotonin, you tend to have a better mood. So serotonin affects your mood, your appetite, and your sleep patterns. And there's an increase in melatonin. When you have more dark, you have more melatonin. And that can make you feel more sleepy. And then you don't make as much vitamin D because you're not getting outside. And vitamin D, when your vitamin D is too low, you can tend to have more mood issues. And that's been linked with depression too. And so you have to make sure that it's autumn anxiety or not something else. And so there's a licensed psychologist in New York, Patricia Thornton, who agrees that seasonal changes can bring about mood changes and anxiety. But autumn anxiety is not recognized. We talk about SAD, seasonal affective disorder. With the shorter days, the nights are longer, the weather's colder, there can be anxiety of going back to school and pressure to be academically successful and socially successful. Whereas you're kind of light and carefree in the summer, and when it gets to be autumn, now you're expected to produce. And that's a change in mindset from the summer. And transitions in general can cause anxiety. Anyone who struggles with transitions or changing in life circumstances, changes in schedule with school, or because makes people more anxious, they may be getting a less sleep, and that makes people unhappy. Clients that have obsessive compulsive disorder and anxiety disorder feel better when they're back at school and work and have a routine. OCD and anxiety can explode when there's not enough to do. If someone isn't doing a lot during the summer, they may be eager to get back to school because they have something to focus on and helps them to alleviate thoughts, worries, and rumination. So making a schedule makes you feel productive and you might be less anxious. Then there's also anniversary reaction. So as you get into the cooler months and receive less sunlight, you remember that winter time is tough. And so anniversary reaction. So like the anniversary of deaths, the anniversary of something bad that happened to you. Just the anniversary of, you know, this time of year you don't feel good is going to bring on these feelings. So just, you just remember that you don't feel good in October, so you don't feel good this October either. And so there's body awareness and unconscious awareness that this is a tough time, so it's going to be tough again. So when summer ends, it can be, you can feel regret for not doing everything you wanted to do during the summer. The opposite is true. If you had a fabulous summer and it's done, that can be depressing too. And then the holiday season is out there, especially if you walk into the supermarket or whatever stores you go into and there's holiday decorations before Halloween. Holidays can be issues. They're not necessarily like Hallmark cards. And so if you get in the cooler months and the holidays are coming and you're not sure how to deal with Thanksgiving, there can be stress, even though you should be happy. So what can you do to help you with autumn anxiety? Number one is get more light. Spend more time outdoors. Make the most of what sunlight there is. Right now we have, it's rainy and icky right now. My goodness. And it can be dark early in the morning. You might want to get a light box. So that's a bright lamp that can be used for 30 minutes a day or more to expose the eyes to extra light. And there are varieties of therapy boxes, and there's some that gradually increase in intensity as you wake up, so they simulate the sunrise even if it's pitch black outside. Get regular exercise. Try to do something for around 30 minutes. Of course, not everybody's going to do that, but any kind of movement will help you, even if it's something. There's no end of videos online. You can go onto YouTube and find any kind of exercise off of YouTube, and you can exercise for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, whatever amount of time you would like. And so you can always do something inside your house if you have to. And of course you can go back to the gym if your gym is your thing, or take a dance class or do something outside of your house. And you can also do something you might not be as inclined to do when it's really hot in the summer. You can take long walks and go on bike rides outdoors. Exercise is really, really helpful. It tends to make you feel better. And which exercise is the best exercise for you? What's the best exercise for you, Ron?
The one you'll do.
You got it. All right. Autumn is also a good idea to think about what you eat. During the autumn, it's a great time to make your favorite soups or meals you didn't eat during the summer. Start thinking about soup, chili, squash, less salad, more cooked vegetables. You can start something new because it's a time of fresh starts. You could declutter, tidy the house because you're going to be inside a little bit more, so you might want to do some decluttering. Although if you're very cluttered, looking around and saying, oh my goodness, there's clutter. I actually decluttered a small thing this morning. I got up to take my Lyme medicine and my intention was to go back to sleep, but I spent like 20 minutes cleaning out a basket of sweets that I realized I wasn't eating. So I started putting them together in a bag, and I'm going to take them to the soup kitchen so they have some Halloween candy. So stuff that I didn't plan to eat, I'm going to get rid of it. And the bag is much lighter, and it made me feel good to do that. And so I'm thinking to myself, I need to do a lot of decluttering, and I'm going to make myself, on a day that I have decided this is a good day to do a decluttering activity, I'm only going to do one thing. So I don't feel like overwhelmed by, oh my God, there's so much decluttering to do. I'm going to do one closet or one drawer or part of a closet, the bottom of the closet one day and the top of the closet a different day, and figure out places to get rid of stuff. And you know, go through different things in the closet and see if there's stuff I can get rid of. Because when you work a lot, clutter happens. And you get things and you don't know, you forget that you have them, and then you don't realize you're not using them. And stuff tends to build up. I'm looking forward to a time when I don't have to work as much, because I'll spend more time on this decluttering. It feels nice when you have... When you have a space that's decluttered, it makes you feel good. And then you can reframe your outlook. That's what I talked about before. Try to look at it by reframing Don't think about it as loss. Welcome the darkness. There's things that you can do. So for me, I don't feel as pressured to be outside if it's dark out. So I'm going to do my yoga indoors in my room. I don't feel like I have to get outside as much. I'm going to spend more time indoors relaxing. Think of being inside as a cozy experience and make sure you have what you need to be cozy. You have the right blankets and you have the right pillows and you have the right space to be cozy. Ron's starting to think about getting pellets for our pellet stove so he can be cozy in his little nook downstairs. So, yeah. So like I said, warm blankets, autumn colors. And then that's something you can look forward to because you can't dress in warm, cozy clothes in the summer unless you tend to be very cold. And so there's cozy things you can wear this time of year that you can't wear in the summer. And you can look forward to that as a nice thing. You could wear fuzzy sweatpants and fuzzy, hoodies and things. And you can also get professional help. It's always a good idea to get professional help if you can do it. And somebody to talk to. You can get cognitive behavioral therapy. It helps anxiety and seasonal affective disorder. If you really need antidepressants, they're often prescribed for seasonal affective disorder. Seasonal affective disorder is definitely about depression, but it does tend to start in autumn because of the anticipatory anxiety and because of the short days. And see your doctor, go to the doctor, get a checkup, talk about what's going on. Your doctor can help you. And there's, I'm right now, I'm a big fan of L-theanine because I find that L-theanine is extract of tea, of the plant Camellia sinensis. That's green, black, and white tea, which are all the same plant, by the way. So theanine is something that makes the tea plant a little more calming than coffee because coffee doesn't have anything in it to help you calm down. Whereas tea, even though it has caffeine, it also has L-theanine. And L-theanine, when it's concentrated and you take it, it helps you to produce more GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is a calming neurotransmitter. And it's just generally calming altogether. And I also find that I'm very sensitive to things that produce GABA. I must be good at producing GABA. So if I overdo ashwagandha or if I overdo... I wouldn't take GABA on its own. Ashwagandha and taurine and glycine make me make more GABA and they make me groggy and drowsy. And hibiscus as well. I have to be careful how much hibiscus I take. And I don't know if that's that I'm making GABA or I'm making melatonin. But hibiscus makes me, it knocks me out and then I wake up groggy. But L-theanine, when I take it, it helps to take the edge off my anxiety and it doesn't make me groggy. So I'm a big fan of that. Those other things might be helpful for you, ashwagandha or GABA or glycine or taurine. They are all calming items that will increase GABA. And nervines in general, so oat straw and St. John's wort and passion flower, and those I can tolerate as well. Linden, chamomile, they all tend to be calming, help your nerves to function better, and can help with anxiety. So those are all things that can help. So getting counseling can be helpful too. And you can get a local counselor. You can see the counselor in person or see them online. And then there are websites, there are online services that you can do for counseling. So you could go to something like BetterHelp or HERS or Talkspace or onlinetherapy.com. There's lots of online therapy where you can see somebody from, if you don't mind seeing somebody virtually, there's lots of opportunity for that. So I suggest considering finding ways to embrace the autumn, that it's not a bad time of year, and make sure you have downtime, time that you don't have to do anything. Don't feel like you have to clean everything up and that you have to declutter yesterday. Because I think what tends to happen is you come inside and realize you're going to be spending a bunch of time inside and you look around and go, oh my goodness, what a mess, and it's overwhelming. Especially at the same time that you may have more responsibilities because that's what tends to happen when the summer ends. So anyway, so that's autumn anxiety. All right, so I wanted to go back to our series on fat loss. So we'll get to, what do we have, about 20-odd minutes to talk about that right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into that a little bit. What's the best weight loss method, Ron?
The one you'll do.
Yes, that's right. Very good. That's exactly right. So whether it's taking Ozempic, the thing is when you take Ozempic, Ozempic does help your insulin sensitivity. It improves your insulin sensitivity and it reduces your appetite. But Ozempic, the other thing Ozempic does is it makes you not want to eat as much. And so the way to lose weight is basically to reduce your caloric consumption in a setting of hormonal balance. And that's what Ozempic helps you to do. So anything you can do to reduce calories, you're going to lose weight. When people unfortunately starve, regardless of their size, they tend to lose weight. So it's up to you if you want to use a pharmaceutical method. And pharmaceutical methods are so popular right now. The thing is you can take a pill and now, and the pill does the work for you and you really, people really are deterred from overeating. And that's, I think that's the big way that it works. It improves insulin sensitivity and people are just deterred from overeating because it increases satiety so much. So if you can increase your satiety and your insulin sensitivity, without taking a pill like that, that's a good thing. So whatever diet you want to do, as long as it's healthy, is going to be helpful for you. And just doing as much as resolving to eat only or mostly whole foods, where you're eating real fruits and vegetables, whether they're cooked or raw, eating nuts and seeds, eating beans, eating natural protein, and just not eating a lot of stuff in boxes and packages that have chemicals in them, that's going to go a long way to helping you. Most of what you do is fiber, things that are high in antioxidants and clean protein, that's going to go a long way to helping you. And whether or not, and the other thing is to not focus so much on fat loss, because if you eat that way, you're going to be healthier. And that's what I encourage my patients to do, not focus so much on the fat loss, but focus on creating a healthy lifestyle and healthy habits. And you'll probably lose at least some weight if you do that. By eating fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, if you're not intolerant to them, clean animal protein, if you're not intolerant to that, dairy tends to be problematic because the protein in dairy tends to raise insulin. And especially that's especially problematic for women who are trying to lose fat, especially if they're postmenopausal, because dairy is meant for growth. So if you eat dairy protein, it's going to take you in the wrong direction. Now, if you can lose fat, if you're successfully losing fat and you're eating dairy, it's fine. I recommend not relying on dairy as your main source of protein, but having it as a garnish if you're going to eat it at all. And if you're really stuck, you may want to consider doing without dairy. And then watching your starches and sugars. And starches and sugars tend to raise insulin. So the less of that you eat, the better off you're going to do. Some people do ketogenic diets. There's some concern that ketogenic diets in the long run aren't good for you, that you have, because you're lowering, you're sustaining yourselves on ketones, and really you're supposed to have some glucose in your bloodstream. So there's some issues about that. And I think I'm going to look into that, why the idea that maybe the ketogenic diet isn't so good for you. I have patients who come in, they do the ketogenic diet, they are on it, they feel really healthy and happy on it. I don't know if long-term those people are not going to do well with it. I think that in my experience, most people don't do well long-term on the ketogenic diet. And if that's you, if you've done the ketogenic diet and then you found you had to stop after a period of time, it may be because it wasn't for you, and that's okay. But there's a subset of people, and I estimate maybe 10 to 20% of people, when they do the ketogenic diet, they hear the angels singing that it does great things for them and they feel fantastic on them, and they tend to stick with it. If you can't seem to stick with it, it's probably not for you. Your body's telling you, no, I need more carbs than this. I couldn't possibly do the ketogenic diet. I tried it for a couple of weeks once, and I felt awful the whole time. And the feeling awful was alleviated the minute the 2 weeks are up and I put some fruit in my mouth. So ketogenic diet is not for everybody, and there may be some issues with it. But you know, eating a basic whole foods diet with a proportion of foods that works for you, that's what's going to work for you. When people do Noom, for example, you know, they figure out a dietary style that works for them, and Noom takes that into account. What's impressive to me is things that Noom, these companies like Noom and WW and lots of other companies that help you with fat loss, they're encouraging people to take these GLP-1 enhancers. So obviously fat loss is really difficult and fat loss is hard to maintain, but just be aware, if you take a GLP-1 enhancer, you're probably looking at taking that drug for the rest of your life and side effects. So I don't want anything to upset my stomach, and I don't want anything, I mean, I have enough stuff that I'm trying to work through without having a drug that gives me side effects. So I won't be taking a GLP-1 enhancer anytime soon. You can do, if GLP-1 enhancer is where you're at and you're successful with it, great. It's an acceptable thing to do in this day and age. And if you can do it without, even better. I think it's good to be able to do it without, because then you're training your body as it is to have better metabolism. All right. So one of the things that I talk about with fat loss is that supplements can be helpful, but supplements are not the end all and be all. And the main thing to help you lose fat is, what did I say? It is caloric reduction in a setting of hormonal balance. And that has nothing to do with what supplement you take. It has to do with what you eat and how you exercise and how you rest and all those things, that you want to lower your cortisol and get good rest and not be in a stressed state. If you're in a stressed state, it's very hard to lose weight. So supplements are things that can enhance, but there's no supplement that you can take that's going to really do the weight loss for you. The only thing that we know that does that are these drugs, the GLP-1 enhancers. And there's that idea that berberine has GLP-1 enhancing activity. I have not seen people take berberine and lose significant amounts of weight. Berberine is helpful. It does help your liver to work better. It can help you lower your hemoglobin A1C. And it can help to an extent with fat loss. And it's a wonderful antimicrobial. But I haven't seen people are not going to lose tons of weight like they are with the GLP-1 enhancers. GLP-1 enhancers are really, they're impressive as to what they can do, but they come at a cost, both financial and side effect. All right, so let's talk about some of these supplements. So let's look at African mango. So African mango extract, and there's it's pretty popular. It's new to the Western world. It's Ervingia gabonensis. I tried to take it once and it gave me a lot of gas, so I had to stop. So that may happen to you if you try to take you'll see it called African mango or called Ervingia. But that's what you're specifically looking for, Ervingia. So if you're regular mango, just the fruit that you eat, is not what you're looking for. It's Ervingia. So it's native to tropical West African forests, also known as bush mango, wild mango, and dika nut. It has a greenish yellow skin, a fibrous pulp, and a large hard seeds. And it's not the common mango. The common mango, the genus is Mangifera, and it's Mangifera indica, which means it comes from India. So it's Mangifera. This is Ervingia. Ervingia is African mango. So it's high in, the pulp is high in vitamin C. It has a lot of carotenoids. The African mango tree has been used in traditional medicine. Local tribes use the leaves, roots, and bark. And it treats scabs and pain in your skin. And the seed is being researched. So the extract has a following in the West for weight loss. It's derived from the seed. You can get it in liquid, capsule, and powder. It may be blended with other extracts from things like green tea, berries, and kelp, and sold as supplements. It's supposed to inhibit growth of fat cells, although we need more studies on it. And so there are a bunch of nutrients in African mango extract, has vitamins and minerals, iron, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, and sodium. And of course, it has fiber, antioxidants, and plant protein. And it's high in fat, and it's which is mostly myristic and lauric acid, which are fats that are also in coconut oil. And so those fats, they especially the lauric acid, is a medium chain triglyceride, and those tend to help with fat loss. And there's a lot of phenolic compounds. There's flavanols, tannins, and ellagic acid. And ellagic acid is very nice because it helps with cardiovascular health. Phenolics are antioxidants. They fight disease-causing molecules in your body. And there have been studies on it. And in a 10-week randomized control, 52 adults took 300 milligrams of it a day, and they, on average, they experienced 28 pounds of weight loss in 10 weeks. So that's impressive. And their fasting blood sugar and total and bad their LDL cholesterol fell significantly. And there was a 90-day study in 24 adults with metabolic syndrome that raises your risk of chronic illness. They also took 300 milligrams of African mango extract. Again, significant drops in blood sugar, waist circumference, triglycerides, and VLDL. So this may be worth trying, or Vingia, because it does have some impressive results. And when they combined it with Cissus quadrangularis, which is a vine, also experienced an 8.8 decrease in body weight. And reductions in body fat and waist circumference in those groups were also significant. So African mango extract it's been studied to reduce body weight, fat, waist circumference, blood sugar, triglycerides, and cholesterol, but there need to be more studies. The downsides, they don't suggest any toxicity. The only side effects were headaches, gas, and I had the gas. And I don't normally get gassy. I've got my diet pretty dialed in, and I eat a lot of produce, and produce does not tend to give me gas. What gives me too much gas is if I eat things I shouldn't, like too much dairy, too much pastry, too much sugar, and I have to eat a lot of it. If I eat my normal diet, even a little bit of sugar isn't going to give me gas. Like right now, I'm fine, but I will get gas. I found this Ervingia made me really gassy. I just couldn't take it. And people can get constipated too. So it does affect your digestion. And then one person with chronic kidney disease had to start dialysis after taking it. So if you have chronic kidney disease, you might want to stay away from it. And then you also have to make sure you're getting authentic Ervingia. So people are taking, 150 milligrams twice a day, and one study 30 to 60 minutes before a meal. So it's something that might be helpful. It's a supplement that might be helpful. Again, not as important as eating a healthy diet and getting regular exercise and reducing your stress. So that's African mango. Now let's talk about L-carnitine. Oh, yeah, L-carnitine. There we go. Okay. L-carnitine is an amino acid that's made by the body. It's found in food and supplements. And some studies suggest it may offer other health benefits like increasing weight loss, improved brain function. Acetyl-L-carnitine gets into your brain better. Popular claims about supplements don't always match with the science. L-carnitine is a nutrient and dietary supplement. It plays a crucial role in the production of energy by transporting fatty acids into your cell's mitochondria. This is something we could give you to take because it does help to port fatty acids into your mitochondria and might give you more energy. The mitochondria are the engines within your cells. And it burns fats to create usable energy, and your body can make L-carnitine out of lysine and methionine. You also need a lot of vitamin C to make it. And in addition to L-carnitine produced in your body, you can obtain small amounts by eating products like meat or dairy products. Vegans or people with certain genetic issues may be unable to produce or attain enough. I actually have a patient who has that condition, and we give her L-carnitine to take. There are other kinds of carnitine. So it's an inactive form. Let me see. So it tends to reduce blood levels of carnitine and increase fat buildup. So you don't want to take D-carnitine because it's an enantiomer, and it's the mirror image chemically, so it doesn't work in the body in the same way. Acetyl L-carnitine is the most effective form for your brain, as I said previously. There's propionyl L-carnitine, and that's good for circulatory issues like peripheral vascular disease. It may increase nitric oxide, which improves blood flow. And then there's L-carnitine L-tartrate, which is in sports supplements. Acetyl L and L-carnitine seem to be the most effective for general use, and pick the form that's best for your personal needs. Its main role in your body involves mitochondrial function, and in cells it helps transport fatty acids into mitochondria. Most of it's stored in your muscles along with trace amounts in your blood, liver, heart, and kidneys, and may help increase mitochondrial function. I think this is something you should be taking, L-carnitine.
Okay.
Because it's going to help to transport, it's going to help your mitochondrial function. Because L-carnitine helps move more fatty acids into your cells, it can be used as a weight loss supplement, and that's been studied. Another analysis of 9 studies found people lost an average of 2.9 pounds more weight when taking L-carnitine, which isn't a lot, but it might give you more energy. It may benefit brain function, especially acetyl L-carnitine, and may help prevent age-related mental decline, and that's been studied as well. L-carnitine could benefit heart health, and it helps with it can help to reduce blood pressure, your systolic blood pressure, and it can help with exercise performance. It may improve exercise recovery, muscle oxygen supply, stamina, muscle soreness, red blood cell production, and performance.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we're going to get you some.
Why am I not doing that?
We'll get you some. All right. And you can eat some red meat if you want to, because red meat is a good source of L-carnitine.
Right.
So maybe every couple of days you should have a burger or some grass-fed beef. It might help with depression. In a review of 12 studies, acetyl L-carnitine help to reduce some symptoms of depression. It seems to be relatively safe, and you can take as much as 2 grams a day, and it's safe for long-term use, but it can raise your TMAO, and high TMAO is linked to trimethylamine and oxide, which is increased to a risk of atherosclerosis. So that's why it's not as popular. Food sources of L-carnitine have a greater absorption rate than supplements. So we can give you some to take, but you should probably have some grass-fed beef every couple of days. And if you're a vegetarian, you're gonna have a higher need for it because you're not getting it in the animal protein that you're not eating. And so there are some studies. The studies are mixed on it, so I don't think there's any reason to we should try it with you, and we wouldn't give you acetyl L-carnitine. We'll give you just plain L-carnitine or L-carnitine L-tartrate, so I have to find that. So I should take propionyl L-carnitine. That's the one for blood pressure, and for brain function you take the acetyl. So that's L-carnitine, and we have more ideas about supplements for you, but I have to wrap up. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.